Welcome everyone, and thank you so much for having me here this morning. So I see you're all muted, so that's excellent. I will be taking questions, but I will take them at the end of the presentation, if that's all right with you. If you do come up with questions in the middle, feel free to just drop them in the chat box and I can get to them at the end of the presentation. So my name is Hannah and I am a volunteer with Osteoporosis Canada. So I'll be giving the presentation today. It's about 30 to 40 minutes long and I'll provide some general information about the bone basics of osteoporosis. Please note that this information is not intended to replace medical advice and please consult with your healthcare provider with any individual medical questions and to determine the best health plan for you. So let's jump right in. First thing we like to talk about is who we are as an organization. So Osteoporosis Canada is an organization that educates, empowers, and supports individuals and communities in the risk reduction and treatment of osteoporosis and osteoporotic fractures. We have a scientific advisory council, which is made up of experts that provide medical guidance and ensure that all of our information is based on current and up-to-date research. So here is an overview of what we'll be talking about today. We'll start with the bone basics. We'll get into fracture risk assessment, medication options, and then we'll get into the good stuff, nutrition, exercise, and movement, and we'll end off with falls and broken bones. So jumping right into the bone basics. First, we like to remind people that bone is actually a living and growing tissue, and it's constantly undergoing changes. And our bone is made up of a framework of protein that's hardened by the minerals, calcium and phosphorus. You'll note that there are two types of bone. So you see here this lighter, less dense part. This is called the cortical bone. The trabecular bone. And this dense outer layer is our cortical bone here. So that's the two types of bone that we see pictured. And just some other terms for you. So the amount of bone tissue we have is called bone mass, and density refers to how compact the bone structure is. We also like to draw the comparison to a bridge. So our bone behaves similar to a bridge in that it has to be very strong and rigid to offer support. Think of a bridge with cars driving over it, but it also has to be a bit flexible. Your bridge has to be able to move a little bit if there's an earthquake or wind or things like that. And our bone is very similar. It's both very rigid and strong, but also has some flexibility, similar to a bridge. So on this next slide here, we see what we call the remodeling process. So our bone is constantly being repaired through this process. And this process involves two primary types of cells. So on the far left there, you see some pink cells that are called osteoclasts. And osteoclasts remove old bone. So they create this cavity on the bone surface. And then that cavity gets filled in by cells called osteoblasts. Osteoblasts are the ones you'll see in the middle there. And osteoblasts lay down protein in the form of collagen, and this is hardened by calcium and other minerals. So osteoclasts create the cavity and osteoblasts build the bone. Some alliteration to help you remember that. All right, on this next slide, we see how our bone mass changes with age. So this is because the activity of those osteoclasts and osteoblasts varies throughout our life cycle. So up until about the age of 20, you're building a lot of bone. So those osteoblasts building the bone are very active. And around age 20 to 30, this is when we hit our peak bone mass. And this is the most bone mass we will ever have in our lifetime. So from there, we start to lose bone at a rate of about 1% per year. Sorry, that pink line there, that's where our peak bone mass is, our pink circle. So for women at menopause, our bone loss increases to about 2 to 3% per year, but in men, it remains slower until around the age of 65, and then they can also experience a more accelerated bone loss as well. So it is natural to lose bone as we age, but what we're worried about with osteoporosis is when that bone loss reaches a point where fracture risk increases. So that brings us to our definition for osteoporosis. So osteoporosis is a disease characterized by low bone mass and deterioration of bone tissue, which can lead to increased risk of fracture. It is not the same thing as osteoarthritis. These two terms can often get confused. Osteoporosis is a disease of the bone, whereas arthritis is a disease of the joints and the surrounding tissues. So it's important to have an accurate diagnosis so that you can get proper pain management and treatment for the disease. Okay, so on this slide, this is showing us a close-up of that trabecular bone that we saw earlier. So you'll notice kind of a honeycomb-like structure. On the left side, you'll see a normal bone, which is more dense than the bone on the right. On the right, we see that there's not as many cross links, and this bone is more porous, which makes it more fragile and can increase risk of fracture. Osteoporosis is often called the silent thief because there are no symptoms associated with the deterioration of bone tissue until a fracture occurs. So you're not going to feel these changes happening in your bone unless a fracture happens. So on this slide, we'll talk about two types of osteoporosis. We have primary osteoporosis, and this is the abnormally rapid bone loss that occurs after menopause or as we age. And then we have secondary osteoporosis. So secondary osteoporosis is when we have bone loss caused by other diseases or drug treatment, and they can affect a person at any time during their life. So you saw that men typically don't lose more bone until after age 65, but secondary osteoporosis can affect people before that age. So one class of drugs that has been shown to be particularly damaging to our bone is the glucocorticoids, such as prednisone. And diseases often treated with glucocorticoid medication are rheumatoid arthritis, colitis, multiple sclerosis, and lupus. There's also medical conditions themselves that can cause bone loss. And so these are Crohn's disease, colitis, celiac disease, rheumatoid arthritis, type 1 diabetes, and chronic kidney or liver disease. In either case, whether it's primary or secondary osteoporosis, the most significant consequence is the increased risk of fracture. So you've heard me mention fractures a few times now, so we'll talk a little bit more about them. So there's four common fracture sites we see with osteoporosis. They are the shoulder, the spine, the hip, and the wrist. Skull, hand, ankle, and foot fractures are not typically associated with osteoporosis. You might be wondering why these four sites. Well, they are rich in that honeycomb or trabecular bone that we saw on an earlier slide. So trabecular bone is particularly sensitive to calcium loss with age and at menopause, and this is what makes these sites more susceptible to osteoporotic fractures. You also see there that over 80% of all fractures after age 50 are caused by osteoporosis. Again, remember that bone loss doesn't hurt. The first sign of osteoporosis is often a fracture. So it's not normal to break a bone from a minor fall, and it may be a sign of osteoporosis. So, you might expect if you fell off a ladder or were in a car accident, that could cause a fracture, and that wouldn't be because of osteoporosis. That's probably just due to impact. But that's fragility fractures are the type of fracture we most commonly see with osteoporosis. So fragility fractures are broken bones that happen spontaneously or as a result of normal activities of daily living, or from a falling, or sorry, from a fall from standing height or less. So for example, something like tripping or falling from standing height, bending down to pick up an object, making a bed, even a cough or a sneeze can trigger a fragility fracture. And a fracture is one of the most significant risk factors for predicting future fractures. So this is why we want to catch these fractures as signs of osteoporosis so we can get proper treatment. A fragility fracture should trigger a bone mineral density test. So you see pictured there, we have a wrist fracture. So wrist fractures are the most common type of fragility fracture in women under 75. And they're typically not seen as serious, but they really are because they're a sign that the individual may have osteoporosis. And one osteoporotic fracture means you're more likely to have another. So another type of fracture we'll talk about is the spinal fracture. And spinal fractures can result in height loss, back pain, sleep disturbance, depression, a protruding abdomen, digestive disorders, trouble breathing, and impaired activities of daily living. So spinal fractures are also called compression fractures, and they can be excruciatingly painful, or they can sometimes go unnoticed. They could also be mistaken for a pulled muscle or just a backache. 2/3 of spinal fractures are painless and therefore go undetected. Because these fractures result in your vertebrae and your spine collapsing or crushing, individuals lose height. And that's what you see pictured here. Because you get these, if the fractures are stacked on top of each other, it creates this curve in the back that we call kyphosis. So that's what you see in that second and third image there. So if fractures do not cause severe pain, then height loss caused by fractures should trigger an assessment for osteoporosis. And we'll talk on the next slide about how much height loss is a problem. But first, I'll just walk you through a little activity here. So you might be wondering why people experience some of these symptoms from a spinal fracture. So if you're sitting in a chair, what you can do, or even if you're standing, but find the bottom of your rib cage with your hand. And then with the other hand, you probably can't see what I'm doing, but that's why I'm explaining it. So you find the bottom of your rib cage and the top of your hip bone. And if you're sitting up nice and tall, you should be able to put about 3 fingers in the space between the bottom of the rib and the top of the hip. So sitting up nice and tall, just try taking a deep breath. Hopefully that should be fairly easy for you. Now, keeping your fingers in that space, try bending slightly forward and just notice what happens to that space. It gets smaller. Now try taking a deep breath in. And you might notice that it's not as easy to do in that bent over position, and that has to do with the amount of space there. So thank you for participating. You can relax now. So that might show you why something like trouble breathing, even digestive disorders can happen when we have that curved spine, because it affects that space that's available in your abdomen. So we'll talk about height loss now. So as I mentioned, that height loss is an early warning sign for osteoporosis. So it's recommended that all men and women over 50 should have annual height measurements. So how much height loss is a problem? Well, if you've lost 2 centimeters or more of height in the past year, or 6 centimeters or more overall from the time you were a young adult, this should be a warning sign to you, and you should ask your doctor about a spine x-ray and assessment for osteoporosis. Something else to take note of as well is just, do you have a more rounded spine? That can also be an indicator that you should get checked for osteoporosis as well. So the last type of fracture I'm going to talk about is the hip fracture. 40% of people who fracture a hip had a prior non-hip fracture, which was not recognized as a warning sign for osteoporosis. So the consequences of not being diagnosed can really be devastating for people. Hip fractures are obviously quite the problem. 1 in 3 hip fracture patients will suffer another fracture within 1 year. And after a spinal fracture, the risk of suffering a second spinal fracture in the following year is 20%. After a wrist fracture, 14% of people will suffer another fracture within 3 years. So if osteoporosis had been identified when the wrist was broken, or it would be very likely that treatment with effective medication would prevent many hip fractures. So now you might be wondering, how much do I need to worry about osteoporosis? Well, it does affect one in three women and one in five men. Osteoporotic fractures are more common than heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer combined. And this slide is because oftentimes we think of osteoporosis as being a woman's disease. You did see that it does affect women a little bit more frequently than men. But it's also a big problem in men, so this presentation is definitely for you all as well. In men, it's substantially underreported, underdiagnosed, and undertreated. Fewer than 10% of men with fragility fractures receive osteoporosis therapy, and over one quarter of hip fractures in Canada occur in men. A man is also more likely than a woman to die of complications following a hip fracture. So don't worry, this information is all applicable to you as well. All right, so that was a lot of information there. That was our first section, the bone basics. I'll let you know now that don't worry, there will be some resources that I share at the end of the presentation with more information, because I know it is a lot of information that I'm dumping on you all at once. So don't be worried about that. So the next section we have is our fracture risk assessment. So you might be wondering, who should get a bone mineral density test? This is also called a BMD test. First, just know that this test is safe, it's painless, and it accurately measures the density of your bones. And it's recommended for all women and men who are 65 years or older. It's also recommended for postmenopausal women and men between 50 and 64 years old if they're at risk of fracture. So what is a risk factor here? So some risk factors include having a fragility fracture after age 40, if one of your parents has had a hip fracture, if you have high alcohol intake, if you're a current smoker, have low body weight, or are on a high-risk medication, or if you have low bone mass. So if you're in that 50 to 64 age category and you have a risk factor, then this is a sign to get a BMD test. Also, in younger men and women who are under 50, if you have a disease or a condition associated with low bone mass or bone loss, then they should also get a BMD test as well. So we do need to look beyond just the BMD results, as they're part of the equation of osteoporosis, but they are not the whole equation. So your healthcare practitioner will now conduct a comprehensive 10-year fracture risk assessment, combining your BMD results with age, sex, previous fragility fracture, and other risk factors I mentioned before. So this assessment gives a more accurate prediction of fracture risk and will divide patients into one of three categories. And you see those categories on the screen. We've got a low risk, moderate risk, and high risk group. So what do those groupings mean? Well, if you are in a high fracture risk category, then you will receive medication and you will also be asked to do repeat bone mineral density tests about after 1 to 3 years. And if you're in the moderate risk group, you may or may not be given medication, and repeat measures of the BMD tests will be used every 1 to 3 years to monitor as well. And this may be a little more frequent depending on your bone mineral density, but your healthcare practitioner would decide for you. And finally, if you're in the low risk group, you will not receive medication. And if there's no additional risk factors, a testing interval of 5 to 10 years may be sufficient. I'll also note that these clinical practice guidelines are currently under review by our Scientific Advisory Council. So new guidelines should be out within the next year. You don't need to worry so much about that. That's more just may change with how the doctors are grouping people. All right, so that's a pretty short section. This one's even shorter. So our medication options, and then we'll get into our diet and exercise. So there's three goals of osteoporosis medication. The first is to reduce fracture risk. Secondly, we want to prevent further bone loss. And third, we want to increase bone mass. So you remember me talking about those osteoblasts and osteoclasts? Well, some medications will slow down the breakdown process of our bone, and some will speed up the building process. So they do, some act in slightly different ways. You can discuss with your doctor which medication option works is will be the best for you. A question we get asked is, how will you know if the medication is working? Well, I mentioned before that when our bone density is changing, we don't feel those changes, so you likely won't feel any different. But we'll know it's working if your bone density remains the same or increases and no new fractures have occurred. And this is monitored through those bone mineral density tests. So that's why they do those repeat tests. It's also important to note that discontinuing medication may result in more bone loss. So people do respond differently to different medications, but all medications reduce the risk of spinal fractures from 30 to 70%. For high-risk individuals, the benefits of drug therapy far outweigh potential risks. All right, I told you that section would be brief, just two slides there. Next up, we have our nutrition section. So again, our bone is a living tissue, and this is why healthy food choices are essential to build and maintain the best bones for the body. There's three important nutrients we'll talk about for bone. So the first one is calcium, and this is one of the key minerals that makes bone hard. Then we have vitamin D, which ensures our bodies can absorb enough calcium from the gut. And finally, we have protein. Protein is essential to build and maintain collagen in the bone, and it's also important for the growth, maintenance, and fracture healing processes of our bone. So we'll talk about each one in detail. So first up, we have calcium. Calcium has many roles in our body, and it's actually crucial to maintaining life. Without it, we would die. Just about every cell in our body requires calcium to function. So the body carefully regulates calcium so it's available wherever and whenever it's needed. So bone is the place where our body stores calcium, and 99% of the body's calcium is found in the bones and teeth. 1% of the body's calcium is found in the blood, where it's transported around the body so it can perform many life-sustaining functions. So if we're not consuming enough calcium through our diet, then calcium will be drawn out from the bone to ensure that our blood levels are maintained in a healthy, safe range. So this is a problem, of course, because we need that calcium in the bone, and if without it, our bones become more fragile. So when this happens, this is why we want to make sure that our diet contains enough calcium so that our bodies don't have to pull that calcium out of the bone. So the daily calcium requirement recommended for people over 50 is 1200 milligrams. So you want to be trying to consume that much calcium to prevent too much calcium being pulled out of the bone. So Osteoporosis Canada strongly recommends obtaining calcium from food sources whenever possible. We'll talk about supplements on the next slide, but for now we'll focus on the food. So you might be wondering, how do you know if you're getting enough calcium? Well, you can give yourself a baseline of 300 milligrams of calcium simply for eating anything in the day. There's small amounts of calcium in a variety of foods that we eat. Then you can add more calcium based on your food choices. So for example, you can get 300 milligrams of calcium for any of the following: 1 cup of milk, 1 cup of fortified soy, rice, or almond beverage, 1 cup of fortified orange juice, 3/4 cup of plain yogurt, and 1/2 can of salmon with the bones in. That's the important part. The bones contain the calcium. When we do these presentations in person, you see some people have a strong reaction to that. They do not want to be eating bones. That's okay. You don't have to, but that if you are consuming salmon and you leave those bones in and you can stomach that, it is a good source of calcium. And the other helpful tool that we have is this calcium calculator on our website. So if you're not sure how much calcium you're getting, I will share the resource of our website at the end of the presentation. So if you're getting enough calcium from your diet. You do not need to take in extra supplements. It's important to know how much calcium you consume from food before deciding on a supplement. So it's very important to calculate your food intake. And then if you're not able to consume enough from diet, this is when you can take the completed calcium calculator assessment to a pharmacist, and they will help you to choose the right amount of calcium in a supplement and learn how to take the supplement. Many people consume enough calcium from food and take supplements as well. This leads to having more calcium in your body than it's able to use, so it's really not necessary. So if you can't get enough calcium from foods, this is when Osteoporosis Canada recommends taking a supplement, but only after consultation with your doctor. For people who are taking calcium supplements, we do have a few tips here. So first, you want to space your calcium intake throughout the day. This will provide your bones with a constant source of building material. You do not need to take more than 500 milligrams of calcium at one time. And you want to take the supplements with lots of water. So there's two types of calcium supplements we'll talk about here. So calcium carbonate is one, and this is one that needs to be taken with food. And calcium citrate is the other one, and it can be taken on an empty stomach. So that is our calcium section. Next, we have vitamin D. So vitamin D helps us to build stronger bones by increasing absorption of calcium. There are very few natural sources of vitamin D in our diet, but vitamin D improves the function of muscles, which will improve balance and help to prevent falls as well. So it really is an important nutrient. So Osteoporosis Canada recommends daily vitamin D supplementation year-round for adults over 19. So for men and women over 50, you can see in that table that the recommended daily intake is 800 to 2000 IU. IU just means international unit. It's not too important, but that's what you'll see on the label. So you just need to know that that 800 to 2000 IU range is what you're looking for. There's different forms of supplements as well. Sometimes they come in drops, what I have here, but they also have them as tablets and different things as well. All right, the last nutrient we will talk about is protein. So in addition to calcium and other minerals, bone is made up of protein. Protein is essential for bone strength and flexibility. It aids in fracture healing and helps to repair our body tissue. And it helps to maintain our muscle tissue, which again is important for mobility and to prevent falls. It's recommended to eat a protein-rich food at every meal. And you see some examples of some protein foods there. We've got some salmon, some beans, some eggs. There's of course some animal-based and non-animal-based protein sources. For example, we also have meat and fish and dairy products, seeds, nuts and legumes, such as beans and lentils. So again, you want a protein-rich source at each meal. And how much is a portion size? Well, for meat and alternatives, it's one serving size is about the size of a deck of cards. And so you want to be consuming 2 to 3 portions daily. And milk and alternatives are also a good source of protein. And it's recommended to have 2 to 3 portions daily as well. And an example of a serving would be 1 cup of milk. And then for things like cheese and yogurt, it'll tell you on the nutrition label. All right, so that was our diet section. Next up, we have exercise and movement. So people with osteoporosis and those at risk of developing it can help to prevent bone loss, fractures, and falls by combining specific types of exercise. Walking is not enough. An exercise routine should include strength training, posture training, balance training, and weight-bearing aerobic activity. And we'll get into each of those. But the benefits of exercise include improvement of muscle mass and strength, fall prevention, and reduction in the risk of spinal fractures. It's getting a little bit dry. All right, first up we have our strength training. So strength or resistance exercise involves moving objects or your own body weight to create resistance. Some common forms of resistance exercise include weight training with barbells, dumbbells, or household objects, or even your own body weight. Some examples you can try from home are push-ups against a wall, or even just making little changes, like instead of flopping down into a chair, you can slowly lower yourself to make those leg muscles work a bit more. So with strength training, it's recommended to perform strength training at least twice a week. And we want to be targeting each of these major muscle groups. So to do that, you would want to pick one exercise for each muscle group. So we've got our lower legs, our upper legs, our chest, back, shoulders, and arms. And again, it's important to start slow. You don't need to load on a whole bunch of weight at once. There's lots of things we can do with body weight, or if you have resistance bands. Most of us are working out from home right now, so whatever you have on hand, you can make do. But remember, you must know your fracture risk category before you start an exercise program. If possible, people are advised to consult a bone fit trained exercise specialist to determine what is appropriate for them. Particularly important if you do already know you have osteoporosis. All right, so that was our strength training. The second piece is postural training. So there are many exercises that work the back, abdominal areas, and shoulders that will help us to maintain good posture. So that can sort of be incorporated in with the strength training as well. You can also, again, seek advice from a physical therapist or bone fit trained exercise professional. With postural training, we also just want to check we're regularly standing with good posture. So you can do that by reminding yourself of the following. Balance your weight evenly on both feet. Gently draw your belly in. Keep your gaze straight ahead. Gently tuck in your chin and draw your breastbone up slightly. And you can do posture training daily. That's what's recommended. So normally if I was in person, I'd be seeing everyone sit up in their chairs a little bit on this slide. So we like to take you through an activity here too. So if you're sitting in a chair, try and sit up nice and tall and pretend you have a string attached to the top of your head and it's pulling you upwards, lengthening your spine. Gently draw your belly in. You can think about bringing your belly button closer to your spine. Now keep your gaze looking straight ahead and you can gently push your chin back with your finger. Think about lifting your breastbone like you're showing off a beautiful necklace. So if you're sitting like that, you might feel some different muscles working than you're used to. That's a good thing. By practicing this regular postural training, we strengthen those muscles and it's easier to maintain that good posture. And you can do this while sitting or standing. It's a good idea to just check in. You don't have to sit like this 100% of the time, but checking in and trying to do it daily is good. So you can relax now. Thank you for participating. So that is our postural training. The third piece we have is balance training. So balance training are the exercises that improve balance and coordination and can also reduce falls and fractures. So again, you can incorporate this into regular daily routines. So something like doing heel raises while you're waiting for water to boil for your tea or coffee, or walking heel to toe every time you go to the bathroom. There's of course other activities as well, such as Tai Chi or dancing or yoga that you can incorporate into your daily or weekly routines. The key with balance training as well is we want to be doing it daily and you want to pick an exercise that's a bit of a challenge for you, but not so much that you're likely to fall. It's important to observe safety precautions while doing balance training, such as having a wall, a table, or a chair nearby to hold on to. Another good idea, as things start to open up finally, you might be able to find some classes in your community that include balance exercises, or you can get help selecting the right exercises for you. All right, our last piece with the exercise is weight-bearing aerobic physical activity. So this is a fancy way to say cardio, but the weight-bearing piece is also important. And this is because weight-bearing activity is most beneficial for our bones and muscles because they work against the force of gravity. While you're carrying your body weight, like walking or dancing, you're loading your bones. When you're doing something like swimming or biking, you're not carrying your weight, the water or the bike is. So if you like swimming and biking, that's excellent. It's very good for your heart and lungs, so you shouldn't stop, but just pick a couple days a week where you're also doing some weight-bearing physical activity. So things like walking, dancing, and step aerobics are good examples. For all cardio, you want to be doing 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous intensity most days of the week. And this can be done in bouts of 10 minutes. So if you look at 30 minutes and you go, that's way too much for me, that's okay. Doing 10-minute bouts will still give you benefits, and you want to try and gradually increase and work up that time over time. We should all be aiming to get our bodies moving and our hearts pumping at least 30 minutes every day. And you'll know you're working hard enough when you're breathing heavier and your heart is pumping faster. If you can talk while doing the exercise but not sing, you're probably working at a moderate intensity. If you can't talk without stopping to catch your breath, you're exercising at a vigorous intensity. If you're at high risk of fracture, please stick with the moderate intensity. Finally, I'll leave you with some bone health precautions for exercise. So you want to avoid movements that involve rapid, repetitive, weighted or end range forward bending or twisting of the spine, especially if at high risk of a spinal fracture. That's a mouthful of a sentence. I think the one that people might get the most confused by is end range motion. So if I can turn my spine all the way to the side, that's going to be end range. So to not go to the end range, you would just bend or twist not quite to the end of where you can go. So some other tips are to step to turn instead of twisting the body. Avoid lifting or lowering to the floor. And you want to do slow, controlled twists, not to the end range of motion. And you want to hold the weight close to your body, not overhead. If you have concerns, consult with a physical therapist or an occupational therapist to learn how to perform daily activities safely. So again, this is particularly important if you know you're at high risk of fracture. All right, so here we see a resource that we have on our website. Typically, when we did these presentations in person, we'd also have handouts. What I will do is I will send the coordinator for this presentation some of the PDF copies of our handouts that can be shared with you as well. So if they decide to email those out to you, they're also available on the website though. So this is a booklet called Too Fit to Fracture, and it's a series of exercise recommendations for people with osteoporosis or spine fractures. Again, it's on our website to be downloaded, and I'll get the PDF copies sent off to you as well. All right, we've made it to the last section, falls and broken bones. So first and foremost, falling is serious. And as we're getting older, we're more likely to fall. For people over 65, 30% fall each year, and the numbers are even higher for people over 80. Not all falls result in injury, but some of them do. Falls are a significant cause of death and disability and have a serious impact on the psychological and physical health of older adults. These injuries include hip fractures, head and brain injuries, sprained or broken wrists and ankles. Injuries from falls are one of the leading causes of admittance into nursing homes. And in addition to the financial cost of hospitalization, the loss of independence can be quite devastating for people. So of course, we want to work to prevent that as much as possible. So what you see on this slide here is the fall cycle. And what it's showing us is that a history of previous falls is one of the best predictors of a future fall. So we'll start here in the orange, and problems arise when a normal caution around falling becomes a more intense fear. And feelings of fear and helplessness, of course, can be really stressful for people. But this fear can also lead to many seniors limiting their activities, and this results in decreased physical activity. And when we restrict our physical activity, this can lead to reduced strength and mobility. And this in turn will increase that risk of falling. So of course, we do not want that. And the takeaway here is that if you have fallen and you recognize that you are in this cycle, it's really important to try and identify where you are and figure out how to break it. So to do that, the last slide I have for you today is our fall prevention and staying independent tips. So first, it's recommended to have your vision and hearing checked. Sometimes you may need to get used to a new pair of bifocals or trifocals. Second is to have medications reviewed. Know why you are on each medication and what it does. Third is to have blood pressure checked. Many people have a blood pressure cuff at home now, or you can go to a pharmacy to get it checked. Fourth is to take better care of feet and review footwear. Things like keeping your toenails trim and wearing a shoe with good support are important. Remember that slippers are called slippers for a reason. And number five is to participate in a regular exercise program, which should include balance exercises. Six is to eat a well-balanced diet and stay hydrated, and to review your calcium and vitamin D intake. Seven is to review your home for safety hazards. So things like wrinkled carpets or throw rugs, clutter on the floor, these can be problematic. Having nightlights in the hallways or bathrooms can be helpful. And we also like to remind people that while pets are a great company, if they like to be around your feet, that's also a tripping hazard to be aware of as well. And number eight, learn more about equipment for home independence and safety. We need to shift our thinking. Canes and walkers do not make us look old. They help us to stay independent for longer. And of course, there's other things as well, but those are the ones that we chose to focus on. All right, so we've now reached the end of the presentation. So I'm just going to share some resources with you, and then I will take questions. So for more information on virtual or in-person educational opportunities, we do have Kathy Piercy as our Ontario Regional Coordinator. And to reach her, you can use info@osteoporosis.ca. And we also have a phone number, which is 1-800-463-6842. And these are some of the resources we have available on our website. So our website is osteoporosis.ca. We also have that information line there as well if computers are a bit of a challenge. We have some resources from the website listed here. So you can subscribe to our Unbreakable newsletter. There is a risk calculator for osteoporosis that you can take online. We have our calcium calculator, our Too Fit to Fracture resources, and finally, information about the Bone Fit program. All right, so lots of information there, I know. There's our website there, so osteoporosis.ca. And I can take some questions now if there are any.